Again, something we're pursuing with the Supreme Court scholars we're talking to. Could freedom of the press rights be constrained in some future U.S. Supreme Court ruling? That fear as Justice Clarence Thomas called on his fellow justices to reconsider a landmark 1964 Supreme Court ruling, a libel ruling, New York Times versus Sullivan. That ruling made it much more difficult for public figures to sue for defamation. And when we say public figures, not necessarily limited to elected officials or actors, actresses, could be someone who is more loosely defined, we should say, as a public figure, which certainly came up here in this Bill Cosby case. Joining us live from Philadelphia, John Colhane, distinguished professor of law, Delaware Law School Wider. Professor, what do you think?
Well, let's put this in some perspective. So far, we just have one vote or one justice expressing a concern. I think one of the reasons that it's gotten a lot of traction is because the president's been calling for a change, you know, to our libel laws.
Right.
And the one way you could get that is through a Supreme Court decision. So, you know, I would have to say that there are different ways you might criticize that 1964 New York Times decision, New York Times versus Sullivan decision by the Supreme Court. But the decision itself, the first decision, only really applied to public officials. It wasn't until about a decade later that the court expanded that to include public figures. And then there's this weird category of limited public figures, and that's where a Cosby case rests. And that's why I think it's a case that engenders some sympathy for at least looking at some of the rules. Because in this case, it's the woman who came forward with a claim of defamation against Cosby for calling her a liar. And the court said, well, because she transmitted her view to a reporter, she put herself in this controversy. And therefore, you know, she's a limited public figure for this purpose.
And I understand that term limited public figure, but could you not make the argument, unless an everyday person could hear the name and know who that figure is, and that would only be through sustained media attention over a protracted period, that it doesn't quite meet the litmus of truly public figure?
No, I think that's a fair argument. I mean, one of the reasons that the court said that public figures had to reach this higher standard of proof, which, by the way, I haven't yet discussed, the idea of actual malice, which is to say you have to show that the statement was knowingly false or was recklessly made, right? That you didn't care whether it was true or false. So we should state that. And I think the strongest argument for, you know, at least tweaking some of the rules is in these cases of limited public figures, because the whole justification, or at least a good part of the justification for the rule, is that a public figure, a truly public figure, you know, a movie star or a Jeff Bezos or someone like that, can take to the press, can take to the airwaves and, you know, defend themselves. Well, somebody who's, you know, in such a limited sphere might not have the same access, and her reputation could be tarred. And for her to have to establish that, I think, is, you know, it's a difficult burden to sustain.
Of course, you're going to have constitutional back to original intent purists argue that this original ruling in 64, as you said, expanded later on, was really extrapolating from the language of the Constitution.
Well, yeah, and in fact, that's exactly Justice Thomas's point. He's an originalist, as we know, and he looked back at what the common law was at the time, and he found that the only kind of countervailing argument was through the 1798 Sedition Act, which James Madison said was really beyond what the Constitution should have permitted. So you've got arguments on both sides, as usual, when you go back to an originalist perspective. And I think, you know, it's a little soon to tell whether he'll be able to persuade people over to his side. I think the likelier thing that might happen is kind of, you know, incursions on the law where you might say, well, you really have to be a public figure. You know, none of this limited public figure business might be one way for the court to chip away at New York Times versus Sullivan and not completely overrule it. I would be astonished if we went from one justice, you know, sort of expressing a concern to having a majority willing to, you know, roll back 50 years worth of jurisprudence.
Well, I mean, I got to say, even as a member of the media, I have sympathy for someone who, as we just discussed, emerges as a public figure, however briefly, but nonetheless is not a household name. I think, you know, they would seem to have better right to sue successfully than an office holder.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think one of the justifications, perhaps the principal justification for the decision in New York Times versus Sullivan, is that we want the press to be able to, you know, say things about public figures that they don't find flattering. And if the standard is, you know, negligence or even strict liability for any misstatement, then the press is going to be, you know, less likely, and media will be less likely to kind of, you know, put themselves out there, because it's not always possible to know all the facts. And so the actual malice standard tried to strike some kind of balance there. And I think maybe, you know, the balance could be struck truck in a different place, at least arguably, when we're talking about especially a limited public figure like this, you know, like this woman.
And quickly, just a few seconds, but Jeff Bezos is a clearly public figure, although he is not elected to any office. He's going after the National Enquirer, not simply that he was defamed, but other issues.
Yeah, it's a privacy case, right? And actually, I wrote about this for Politico. There's a case to be made that even though he is a public figure, for them to publish stuff about him without his consent, he has the same privacy rights as anyone else. And so far, the Supreme Court really hasn't stepped in to abridge those rights, at least in this context.
Yeah, just to make that distinction. Thank you, sir. Nice talking to you again.
Sure, thanks. Bye-bye.
Distinguished professor of law at Delaware Law School, Widener University, John Culhane, here on Delaware.